welcome to another episode of the It's Not Brain Surgery podcast. This is the NNS Practice and Business Management podcast. I'm your co-host for today, Paul Camerato. I'll be co-hosting with Lior Elkheim, and we have a very special guest today.
Today we have one of my good friends, Faith Robertson. Faith is an aspiring academic neurosurgeon with an interest in improving value in healthcare, predominantly focusing on health systems, innovations, neuro-oncology, and global neurosurgery. She has an MD from Harvard Medical School and an MSc in global surgery from King's College London. She's currently a neurosurgery resident at Massachusetts General Hospital and research associate at Brigham Women's Hospital. Faith Robertson. Faith, welcome.
Thank you both so much for having me today.
Excellent. So Faith, I know that you already had done an MSc at King's College London, obviously. Can you just tell the listeners a little bit of where you're at right now in your residency and what you're doing?
Sure. So I'm currently a fourth year resident at Mass General. And in our program, the fourth and fifth year are for research. Our fourth year, we still take some night and weekend call. Fifth year is protected. So I'm actually currently wrapping up my first year as an MBA student at Harvard Business School.
Wow. That's very interesting and a topic that I wanted to discuss with you in a little bit more detail. So what made you decide to pursue an MBA specifically, and where do you see the value for an MBA for neurosurgeons?
Yeah, so I initially thought of doing the MBA when I was a medical student. I had done the prelim courses at Harvard to potentially do a combined degree. And the interest then was some due to work in tech innovation and seeing the need for value-based care. Ultimately, I had decided instead to get the master's in global surgery at the time because I was balancing this interest to see if global health and neurosurgery would be something I could combine for a career. That was an amazing experience. I spent time in London, 4 months in the Philippines, looking at task shifting and task sharing. But I also saw that sometimes the degrees like a public health degree or global health helps you understand the severity of the problems, but a lot of the tools I still needed to fix things, like making sustainable solutions and actually implementing the plans, financing them, et cetera, relied a lot more on the business skills. So for that, and I've continued working in tech innovation and just wanting to become a better leader overall and get those skills, that's what drove me to pursue the MBA now.
Talk to us about your 4 months in the Philippines. That interested me. What did you do down there sort of on a daily basis?
Yeah, so I actually skipped my first day of class of my master's in London. Great student.
Very nice.
And I took a train to Cambridge in the UK where they had the global neurotrauma launch. And at that meeting, there was a lot of discussion on this practice of non-neurosurgeons doing neurosurgery. And it spanned anything from clinical officers to general surgeons. And it was a very heated debate. Some were saying that something is better than nothing, and others were saying, actually, we may be doing harm. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't the data. So I talked to many countries to see who would be willing to let me kind of study a practice they were doing. The neurosurgeons were training general surgeons for about 3 months' time. And instead of task shifting, which is training them and then sending them out on their own, it was a task sharing model where the general surgeons would see a consult. They'd already done their 3 months. They would staff it similar to like we do in the US with a text message, maybe a picture, and their plan, and it'd be shared decision making. So I looked at that model and we published a few papers about that concept.
Were the surgeons, just out of curiosity, doing neurosurgery, or were they just putting in bolts or?
No, it was, especially in like Southeast Asia and areas, there are tons of motorcycles. So a lot of head trauma. Mm. So it ranged, but often it was only emergent and like burr holes or a craniectomy for subdural evacuation or epidural hematoma.
Wow. So non-neurosurgeons were doing that kind of surgery?
Correct. In this program, it was general surgery trained. So there was still that element of the clinical decision-making and the skill set
that neurosurgeons were overseeing. Right?
Correct.
And how were the outcomes? What did they look like?
So it was a retrospective study, but we didn't see any significant difference in the mortality. Again, ideally, we would be able to do more of a prospective study or understand this better. But I think this element, what we came away saying is that if this is going to be done, there are a lot of different protocols and like certifications and planning you can put in place to try to make it as safe as possible.
Another question I had, I remember a staff when I was a first year resident who was telling me over a spine case that it's gotten crazy these days in terms of the expectations for neurosurgery residents. He said they expect us to be astronauts to do brain surgery. And I think what he was referencing was, you know, doing the MSCs, the PhDs, MBAs. You have an interest in being an academic neurosurgeon as well. How do you see the MBA kind of fit into that role where you would have to be doing, you know, research, a busy clinical practice, teaching, but also be involved in innovation and tech?
Well, I will say that the leadership training itself, I think, is already helpful. And how I try to lead a team within residency, how do you cultivate psychological safety and inclusion and conflict resolution, all these elements. I plan to pursue a career in academic neurosurgery. And I think instead of a traditional model where someone is 75% or 50% clinical and the other aspect is running a lab and basic science, I would love to lean into more of a surgical innovation role. And I think there's a lot of research that can be done with that. We recently published with UpSurgeon on these simulators and did a study where spaced repetition learning with simulation seems to be a beneficial way. And you can, I think, integrate either with industry or even startups. We worked with Harvard Innovation Labs and started a neuronavigation company. So I think that it can be done as a balance. But I'm still kind of crafting to see how that's possible.
How does one get involved in innovation and industry early on in your residency? Is there a path to that, or are you too focused on, you know, staffing cases in the OR, doing your regular research, et cetera?
Yeah, I think first and foremost is our clinical training. So I think you can't compromise that, particularly early on in residency. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate to start getting plugged in when I was a medical student at Harvard. One of my neurosurgery mentors had an MBA. He was working a lot in that innovation space. And I said, one idea was something we had thought about clinically, like external ventricular drains, EVDs. Like, it's kind of crazy that we still do it like we did 100 years ago, like exactly. Freehand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And asking yourself, like, you know, why is that the case and how can we do it better? So we had started looking to partner with radiologists, engineers, and eventually ended up creating this company. In terms of how you do this across the board, I think some institutions have innovation hubs within their hospital. That's a great place to start. Finding a mentor who's doing something similar is also. But I think there are increasing ways to think about this problem. But I think an internal innovation hub or just finding people in the institution. It doesn't always have to be neurosurgery, but there might be someone in general surgery or even another aspect, neurology, that's working in this. And that's a great way to get your foot in the door.
So have you actually founded a company?
So I'm not the co-founder, but I'm a clinical advisor. It's called Zeta Surgical.
What's it about?
It uses computer vision technology. So it's kind of like the cameras that are helping the self-driving cars of Tesla. Mm-hmm. And essentially it takes a video of the face in real time and it synchronizes that with a surface map of a CT image or an MRI image. And what that allows is like registration with, instead of picking 50 points in the OR, and that's based on a fixed frame registration with patients that are at the bedside in the emergency room or ICU. They're still kind of awake. They're not in pins. So you have to have other registration. Mm-hmm. And this computer vision map overlays allows you to synchronize those images in real time without a frame.
Wow.
So that's being pursued. We submitted for FDA approval and I'm still involved in advising that company.
Fantastic.
Faith, I know you quite well. And for those that don't know you, you're involved in several other things, not just these companies, not just the MBA, but leading the social media team for the JNS, active involvement in research. And just recently, you ran the Boston Marathon. Is that correct?
I did. I just ran it Monday. So my legs are still a little sore.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, and I'm sure many others are wondering, is how do you manage to balance something like that? Like, how can you be doing all these things at once and train for a marathon and be in a busy neurosurgery residency?
Yeah, I will preface by saying that I am in my research year. So I am still working some nights and weekends, but I'm not in the current 80-hour work week. This is my first marathon since I started residency. I'd done 7 before. So it is challenging to be full-time and do enough training. It's also not my best time. It was still happy. I ran a sub-4-hour, and I ran this with a charity, so it wasn't a qualifying time. But I think you have to find what is important to you. Everything has trade-offs. And for me, running is a way that I also maintain my mental and physical health, which I think is so critical in residency. And then you just have to figure out how to compromise. Like if I work a 24-hour shift and I'm really exhausted, it's like pushing yourself to still go out and do a run. But this marathon meant a ton to me because, you know, I raised for the Brain Aneurysm Foundation. It was the 10th year of the Boston bombing. And the spirit around this mantra of Boston Strong is really something we live and breathe. So it was amazing to be part of that experience. And it's a memory I'll cherish forever.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We were talking off mic before the recording about your background. And did you ever, when you were a young woman or young girl living in Ohio, think that you would be destined for this sort of a career path in neurosurgery?
No, not at all. Yeah, I grew up on a farm. My mom was mostly a stay-at-home mom. My dad has worked in a steel mill all his life. And most people don't even leave my town to go to college. If so, they stay local. I was inspired to go into medicine. When I was 14, my mother got breast cancer. And she was on the clinical trial for Herceptin. Mm. So at the time, HER2-positive breast cancer was very morbid. And I got to, thanks to science, see her go from being a patient to a survivor. Taking anatomy courses and also being someone who loves sports, I was really drawn to surgery because I think of it like a sport. You practice, try to perfect an art, you work as a team. And I actually thought anything but neurosurgery when I got to med school. I was really biased against it because of the intensity or the demographics of the field and the ego. And I decided to try to challenge that bias by testing it. And I found out the people were truly incredible. And it's a field that's very philosophical. You can lose an arm or a leg and you're still really who you are. You hold your identity. And what we deal with is, I think, one of the most vulnerable times in a patient's life, because their memories, their speech, their ability to move and love is actually at stake. And our job is to meet them where they are and find out how to balance quality and quantity of life and get them through that process the best way we can. And I thought that was a beautiful purpose and way to spend my short life on this earth.
Fantastic.
Faith, yeah, I echo a lot of the things that you just mentioned. I completely agree. I had another question for you. As the leader of the social media team, you know, you took over after Naif Al-Taibi, who was really a great leader before you. What kind of advice would you have for young neurosurgeons or maybe even practicing neurosurgeons for the importance of social media, being involved in social media?
Yeah, I think social media is a tool and it's growing in prevalence today. I think it's an excellent way to stay connected with people all over the world, to share ideas, information, to meet others. And you have to kind of decide for yourself how you're going to use that tool. There's an ability for self-promotion, for education. I think it's a really great way. We've harnessed it for the journal to disseminate information like publications, curate conversations. And this is through the short tweets or even video, this podcast, and ways to really engage people. I personally am biased, and I do think it's important to be on these. I realize it's not for everyone, but again, it's just a tool and you get to decide how you use it.
Tell us about what you do for wellness as a fourth-year resident. You know, it's one of the things we struggle with, and as chairs and program directors, how to keep our residents whole and get them through all 7 years. So what do you do besides running? I understand that.
Yeah, running is definitely a big part of it. I definitely don't get 8 hours of sleep. And I don't know if sleep lectures will solve that. But I try to eat healthy. I try to, and I preach about this some to my co-residents too. I think of it like a sport. Like you should have, you know, take care of your body, your mind. I used a vacation last year and spent a two-week retreat at a yoga retreat in Thailand, trying to learn more about Buddhism, yoga, and how to stay centered. Mm-hmm. That was an amazing experience. But also just the day-to-day, I try to make time to talk to family, see friends, balance with people that are in medicine and without. And I've also leaned into creating a community at work. We spend so much time together, 80 hours a week, and sometimes we don't even know the person that we're across the table from. Mm-hmm. So, and my program knows this, but I collect people to go run the Harvard stadiums on the weekends. Sometimes we've done rock climbing. Sometimes it's just going out and, you know, having a beer. But I think personally, I think that building that stronger relationship and trust among your colleagues helps me feel more balanced and engaged. And that community kind of propels me, and it's a support system for when things are hard.
Mm-hmm. Very helpful to have something like that, I think.
Another question I had, you were mentioning innovation and some of the work that you've been doing. Is that, what other projects are you working on in the innovation field?
Yeah, so Zeta Surgical is the most. We've been working with UpSurgeon. I'm going to be collaborating more or working with Johnson & Johnson MedTech this upcoming summer through the MBA. And that's what I'm trying to do with that is I've worked with startups, but to see how innovation comes from a larger incumbent or industry side and try to understand the spectrum of that so I can be a better participant in that or help guide trainees or others how to go through that process of innovation. All my business school classmates that have any questions about healthcare are constantly texting and calling, and there's ways I'm kind of advising in that, just very informally as I'm learning more.
Awesome.
So you're going to business school right now?
Like, yeah, I have finals on Monday, so my flight better not get canceled on the way back.
So you're doing this at night school?
No, I'm full-time 5 days a week during the day, and then sometimes nights and weekends. Now I'm at Mass General.
Yeah, when do you finish?
I'll graduate next May, so 2024.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, we'd like to close with one particular question, and this would be, in your case, I'm going to throw, you went to college at Duke and med school and currently MBA at Harvard. So who is it, the Blue Devils or the Crimson? Or is it Turkey now, I think? What is Harvard's mascot?
Oh, I think still the Crimson, but I'm Duke through and through. Blue Devil, yeah. If you're a UNC fan, I know it's always hard for me to actually bridge that gap, but
I'm not. I'm a KU.
Yeah. So. Coach K, and I would paint my whole body blue and jump up and down at the games, and I still love the Blue Devils.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much for joining us, Faith. This has been a great discussion. Thank you, everybody, for joining and listening to the AANS Practice and Business Management Podcast. Tune in next week where we speak with another guest.